Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter the world of the unknown. There is a silent, invisible world that surrounds us all. A world we don't understand. A world that we wish to understand. And on Paranormal Horizons, we're going to explore this and hopefully get some answers. Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Ophir, and we're here with another episode of Paranormal Horizons. As always, I'm here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang, where we explore the world of the paranormal. Sherry, how's it going?
Pretty good, Jason. How are you?
Not too bad. Just living a low-key life. Busy as usual. What have you been up to?
Well, you've been staying out of trouble, right?
Yeah, well, I've always been good at staying out of trouble.
Oh, wow, that's great. Oh, I've just been relaxing, had a few parties. You know, it's great. It's I just turned the big 60. So, you know, being in my 60th
birthday
party, it was wonderful. Had a nice fire, and it was just beautiful. Really had some birthdays, birthday parties, surprise ones, and planned ones, and, you know, it's time to turn a new leaf, and I'm excited on this new journey.
I wish I had some birthday sound effects for you, but I don't know. Here's Chewy saying happy birthday.
Well, that could be my dog. He looks like Chewy. He's a Shih Tzu, and he looks like Chewy when he's not shaved down.
Yeah, well... You just said happy birthday.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Jason, we missed you last week. We had the girls' paranormal roundtable. And, you know, I was panicked. It's like, oh, my gosh, I love running the dashboard, running the show by myself. But, you know, having the iPhone and trying to finagle, sometimes it didn't work. And it was getting frustrating. And I had within 30 seconds to be live on air, and I was panicking. And it's like, oh, my gosh. But finally, everything came through. I'm still a little bit nervous coming on, but everything smoothed out rather quickly, and we had the most beautiful and talented and professional women of the paranormal that was on, from Maria to Nikki and to Cindy Dove. So it was great. Had an almost a two-hour show, and these gals are just, like I said, very well-versed, dynamic, beautiful, and just talented, and we just had a lot of fun on air.
It just wouldn't feel right if I was there, because if it was a ladies' night, I would have been just kind of the odd man out.
You would have been. You would have crashed the party, right?
Yeah. So I felt it was best.
So afterwards, we went and video chatted just within ourselves, and we had a good night. So, yeah, it was pretty good. But I want to kind of get in, and now that we're on air, I just want to thank everybody for not only supporting us but for listening to us. And again, I keep on repeating, every time that you or I would repost something, it doesn't mean that that's our belief system, our taste, or whatever. It's just for entertainment purposes. So, you know, have at her, and, you know, bring your comments or opinions to whatever story that we post. And, yeah, just thank you for your participation and support. But what we want to do is introduce and welcome back our returning guest, a very special guest, a friend of ours, a friend of mine anyway, Brian Ouellette. He is an exorcist with the Old Roman Catholic Order of Exorcists, well-known exorcist in Ghost Adventures. He works with Zach Bagan, and he is the go-to, so when they do have a problem, a real problem, Brian is the person to go to. So we're going to bring him on air.
Now, we do have a couple numbers in here. What's Brian's prefix?
I'm not sure. So you want? I don't want to put that up publicly, but go ahead and try one, and then we'll try the other. I don't know if I want to put that out on public.
All right.
Okay. So we'll see who's going to answer.
Hey, caller, is this Brian?
It sure is. How are you tonight?
Hey, lucky guess.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. How about yourself?
Very, very good. We're excited to have you back. It's been a while, and I hear that you've been out of the country. Did you enjoy yourself?
I did. It was quite relaxing and very nice to just disconnect from social media and actually the traditional media and kind of just get away from the world for a while. It was wonderful.
Wonderful. Yay. We all need that. We need that R&R just to kind of group ourselves together, bring our souls back in place, and get a new, fresh outlook on life, right?
Absolutely. I had some acupuncture done. It was fantastic.
Really? Did you go to China?
No. It was a spa where we were. So the acupuncturist on staff was a classically trained Chinese acupuncturist who had been working in acupuncture for 15 years in China. So I was so impressed with his skill. My old acupuncturist was also very classically trained, and I haven't found anyone quite as good as that one. So I stopped going. But this particular one had amazing credentials, and so I was like, I'm not going to miss this opportunity because acupuncture is wonderful. If you've never had it done, I can't say enough good things about it. I have chronic migraines, so the only thing that really works, honestly, is ibuprofen, which I don't like to take too much of, and acupuncture. So acupuncture is a nice drug-free way of fixing the issue. The only problem with it is you have to keep going back. Usually a few sessions last for several months to even a few years. So that's pretty good.
That's good. That's very good.
Yeah.
And with me, I've been classically trained, too. It's not five-element system, but the old, old system. And when we do medical qigong, it's a, you know, like a feng shui or whatever. They have different classifications or different way of how you're taught. And I find
right.
That's why I went in classical, because it's thousands and thousands of years. It's your good old foundation standby. So,
it's a proven system.
If you can find somebody that's really good. And I'm like you, Brian. I get that feeling. There's not very many people that are sensitive to energy. No kidding. A lot of people say they are, but when they go hands-on and they can't manipulate the chi or the meridians and things like that, not very many people are very versed in that. And I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but, you know, when you've been in the business and you know about energy and how it flows, you know who's good and who's not, so...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, honestly, in my work with exorcism ministry, you pick up little minor attachments just by virtue of doing the work. It's kind of like I kind of liken it to a person who has to work in a jungle. You're going to get some mosquito bites. No matter how much DEET you put on, you're still going to get a few bites here and there. And a few of them will get infected from time to time. So one of the things that I do to help to balance the energy, which, you know, tends to be overtly negative with the work that I am faced with on a regular basis, is acupuncture. It's a wonderful way of balancing that energy back out. Most of the time when you start to feel imbalanced, it starts to manifest in various types of pain, or for me it's headaches, but it can be all sorts of different physiological manifestations for different people. And so I know when I'm starting to get chronic headaches and I can't get rid of them, that it's time for me to go and get my energy balanced again. So acupuncture is my preferred method for doing that. And it was just really great to find this acupuncturist. It has a lot of just tremendous experience in Chinese medicine, and very grateful for him for what he did.
That's awesome. So,
yeah,
Brian, how's it been? Has it been pretty rough for you as far as you know, having these cases that's been coming up, or has it been, you know, let's put it this way, has it been taking its toll on you, or how are you managing it as an exorcist?
Yeah, I mean, it always takes its toll. There's really no other way that it can go. It's a draining work, and you know, the more that you do it, the more it affects you. So that's par for the course. That's part of our training, and that's part of what we, you know, signed up for. So you know, you deal with it. But the cases recently have been rather extreme. We've had some very severe ones. In fact, some of the worst ones we've seen in many, many years. So this vacation came at a good time. But you know, at the same time, it's been very hectic, and a lot of the, like I said, the cases that we have been seeing have been more of an extreme nature than the usual stuff that we tend to encounter.
Wow.
Have you been noticing an increase in people reporting activity lately?
It's been an increase for the past several years. So I wouldn't say it's any different, you know, recently than it has been over the past few years. That's been about the same. As far as authentic cases, though, I would say that we're seeing a bit of an uptick there. More cases that we've been able to validate and say that, yes, this is a genuine issue that we have to work. But, you know, that's always part of the challenge of this, is trying to discern, you know, what is a person's imagination, or maybe an overactive imagination, to the point where they are seeing demons where they really should be either taking responsibility for bad decisions, or maybe just encountering a run of ordinary, plain old bad luck. You know, we can't be blaming demons for everything that goes wrong in our lives. And some people that are, you know, wired this way or spiritually oriented sometimes tend to do that. When things go wrong, they start to think, oh my goodness, maybe this is demonic. I mean, we always have to filter through that. And it's sometimes very difficult to explain to such an individual that, you know, you think they'd be happy when they come to the exorcist and the exorcist tells them that they have nothing wrong, but they're really actually not. It tends to anger them, because I think they want that validation. And, you know, I'm not going to ever be anything less than honest. You know, if you come to me, you're going to get an honest answer, even if it's not one that you want to hear. But outside of all that, we're seeing more valid cases. And so we've been working a little bit harder than we have in the past. And that could just be, you know, a statistical variance. And, you know, like I said, I say it all the time, this work ebbs and it flows. There's periods of time where it increases in activity, and there's periods of time when it decreases. We're in an increased stage right now. Some of that has to do with our social condition and social unrest. The more anxiety that exists out there in the human consciousness, the more vulnerable we as a species are to demonic attacks. So naturally, when there's a lot of political dissension, or there's a lot of, you know, if we're in a financial crisis or anything that would affect a large number of people in an adverse way, you know, that's going to be a moment where you're going to see an increase in demonic activity, because these are opportunities for the demonic to come in and make a bad situation worse. They love to slip in there with those little gaps of vulnerability that we put out there for them. You know, it's like laying out the red carpet, saying, here, come and get me. And we cannot do that. You know, we can't fall victim to these things. We have to always maintain our composure at all times. And that's not just spiritual. It's also psychological. It's emotional. It's mostly emotional, really. But it also has to do with how we, you know, handle ourselves in society, as a society, because we don't live in a vacuum. We're not only responsible for ourselves, we're responsible for each other. And when we screw up the world, we're screwing it up for everyone. And, you know, the demonic is smart. It knows what gets us, and it takes advantage of those opportunities.
How does one, and I'm sure we've talked about this before, but how does one discern between just a you know, long-term bad luck versus demonic influence? How can we tell, just the layperson that wants to know which is which? Does it take somebody on the outside to say, hey, or are there some clues to where one can identify saying, hey, I think this is actually a demonic influence?
There are clues. I wouldn't say a layperson would necessarily be skilled enough to identify the subtleties. You know, there are always going to be subtle manifestations that an exorcist would be trained to look for. But there are a few things that are more pronounced and easier to recognize, and that would be, you know, a demonic attack almost never occurs in isolation from the environment that the attack is taking place. So if a person pays attention, and not everyone's tuned into this, you know, a lot of times people overlook various disturbances in their environment that are actually paranormal, but, you know, wouldn't be noticeable enough for a person to think that they're haunted. But there will be, if a person looks hard enough and there's a genuine demonic attack going on, there will be disturbances in the environment. So if a person comes to me and says they're having a very severe run of bad luck, one of the things I want to look for, well, are there any other paranormal things going on? You know, are things moving around by themselves? Are appliances turning on and off? Are you hearing banging, pounding, scratching, weird noises? Are there knocks at your door and there's actually nobody there and this is happening on a fairly regular basis? You know, these are things that we look for. Of course, no one's going to have all of these things, but, you know, some of these things in conjunction with a run of what seems like possibly bad luck, we take a little bit more seriously, because then there could be a relationship there, and more often than not, there is. You know, and then there's always going to be a physiological disturbance as well. A person's not going to have a demonic attachment and there not be any repercussions to the person's physical condition. So they will get sick. Usually it is mental or emotional, but in many cases it can also be physical as well, usually with symptoms that are causing them various well, they're having various disturbances, but they, you know, they go to the doctor and the doctor says, I can't really find anything wrong. You know, they do blood tests or whatever else that needs to be done for the type of symptomology that they're exhibiting. And they really can't, the doctor can't really figure out what might be the issue. And so they try different things, or they suspect that it might be something, and they give a medication. And in those cases, they get even worse. They get sicker, and when they should be getting better, assuming the medical treatment was working. So these are other things that we would look for and say, okay, you know, if you're having these physical problems, or you're on medication and the medication's not helping when it should be helping, or the doctor's saying, I honestly don't know what's wrong. There's no identifiable reason for why you're feeling this way, but you are. These are things that, in conjunction with a series of bad luck, or, you know, even what could be paranormal disturbances in the environment, all comes together to form a picture. And we look at that whole, you know, picture and say, what is this telling us? So that's in the initial assessment stages. Once we have identified or confirmed that there is a genuine problem, then, you know, at that point, it's not so much about proving the problem. It's more about figuring out, how did it happen and what do we need to do to resolve it?
So can you tell, Brian, when people say, oh, I want an exorcist, and they believe they want somebody to come in, oh, why don't you come over there? Your research is pretty thorough before you even contemplate about considering even traveling to see these people. Is that correct?
Now it is, yes. In the beginning, in the early stages of the ministry, we would actually do house visits from the get-go. In fact, we would meet the clients often for the first time in person in their own environment, and then we would conduct both the interview and assessment, and even a pre-investigation inside the actual home or place of residence of the victim or alleged victim. Yeah, because a lot of times they weren't really a victim of anything paranormal. It was some other mundane explanation. But, you know, we were doing it that way for a while. Now, because the work has become so prolific and, you know, my name's out there, the work is out there, and we're very accessible. We have a very large queue of intake forms that we have to process. And so now at this stage, you know, we pick the most extreme ones, like almost in a triage type of system. And then we will set appointments based upon our schedule to meet them at the church office. And they'll come to the church office and we will then begin the interview and assessment process there. And typically I want to see the client several times. I often invite them to come to Mass and to be a part of our community, even if it is for just a short time, so that I can get a better picture as to how they respond in certain situations, get to know them. And it also helps in a lot of ways for the client to put some skin in the game, so that I can see that there's actually a commitment from them that they want to get better, because a lot of times people don't realize that, assume for a moment you actually have a genuine demonic problem, whether it be a demonic obsession, oppression, an infestation in your home, or even a demonic possession. Let's say you do, okay? The only way you're ever going to be healed from this is spiritual commitment. There's no other way. And if you're not a kind of person who can be spiritually committed, and in the context to the Catholic faith, that would be, you know, coming, if you're not baptized, getting baptized, and if you are baptized, coming to Mass to receive the sacraments and being a part of a church community so that that can strengthen you with the grace of the church. And if they're not willing to do that work, cultivate that grace through prayer and community, their prognosis is not going to be very good, because the exorcist is not a magician. The exorcist is not a wizard. The exorcist is a facilitator, not unlike a surgeon. Okay, so, you know, I liken it to being a person who has a severe medical problem, perhaps a cancerous tumor. And it's malignant, so it needs to be removed. And if we remove it successfully, there's a good chance that the patient will recover. So, you know, coming to the exorcist is sort of like coming to the surgeon. So the exorcist comes in, and through the tools of the church, which may or may not involve exorcism, and there's different types of exorcism, we do what we, you know, we do the least invasive procedure that, just like a surgeon would, that is necessary to resolve the problem. We extract the offending tissue. In this case, for the exorcist, it's the demon. And then, just like in a conventional medical situation, after the person's had a successful surgery, the tumor's removed, now there's a change of lifestyle that's expected. There's medication that might be required after the fact so that they can continue to improve and get better. And so for the exorcist, in terms of how it works within the church, if the church is the hospital and the exorcist is the surgeon, then the sacraments of the church are the medicine. And the commitment to the church community is the change of life. And if the person's not willing to do that, they're not going to get better, no matter how many exorcisms they receive. So part of my assessment process now no longer involves going to the house from the get-go. Now we want to see that the client is dedicated to getting better, because we have too many clients now, and I don't have time to waste on those that are just looking for a quick solution, some kind of magic incantation that I can say over them and the problem magically goes away. And I certainly don't have time for people who are just feigning a situation so that they can have that ghost adventures guy come over to their house. You know, and these are all things we have to be mindful of now. That's part of, I guess, the drawback to being so well known is that I have to be a little bit more careful and discerning, which is fine. I mean, it helps to keep me on my toes and pay attention to, you know, the problem, and I tend to be very good at that. But that's what we do now. So, yes, to answer your question, kind of a long way getting there, but to answer your question, absolutely, there's a thorough investigation process. There's a lot of commitment and a lot of interaction that we require before we ever get to the point where we make a home visit or engage in exorcism.
So, Brian, I just want to say that I've seen you on Ghost Adventures and where you have performed an exorcism on different occasions. And have those problems, have they been quieted down or been resolved without going into too much detail? So have they been quieted down or at least resolved in the ones that you've had participated on TV?
Well, one of them was resolved that night. So that family was extremely grateful. I received a lot of follow-up conversation from them, and they were extremely happy and very grateful, very sincerely grateful for my coming out to help them with their issue. I've been on three, so that's one. The second episode that I'm referring to, and I won't go into the specifics as to which ones, although some on Twitter know because it's gotten out there in various ways. One family we were working with, and they just stopped communicating with us. And when that happens, basically we close the case because we don't have time to waste, and we don't really. You know, there's no point in trying to keep pushing people to do something that they don't want to do. So essentially what we do is we offer our best advice, we give them a plan of action, and it's really at that point up to them to either take it or leave it. And so if they leave it, we move on out of necessity. And, you know, I'm not someone that's going to force a way of life on someone. I just give them the best information I can, and hopefully they'll take my expert advice. And if they do, they're, you know, usually things go very well for them. But in many cases, everyone, you know, some people think they know better. And then on one of the third episodes, one of the three, we were working and they just decided to take a different course of action. And, you know, again, I can't emphasize enough that, you know, exorcism ministry, regardless of what your, you know, what the issue is, what kind of problem is, very rarely is ever resolved on the first night. Now, we got lucky with that one episode, and then, you know, and sometimes even in the work that we do that isn't aired on television, you know, we get lucky, and the person will come in, and I'm able to resolve their issue right then and there, but that's more rare. More often than not, it requires several visits. It requires a relationship. There's definitely a relationship between exorcist and victim that must develop in order for there to be a successful outcome. And honestly, if a family or a client's not willing to work within that framework, I mean, there's no other methodology. It's just the way that it is. You know, then there's not much that I can do other than to offer my advice. And, you know, if they take it, well, great. Well, we'll do it. If they don't, well, then we move on to the next client. So, unfortunately, you know, and some of it has to do with distance because I don't like taking out of state cases for that reason, because it's very difficult for me to do what needs to be done when I can only see them one time. I'm working a case right now. I've already seen this client four or five times, and we're still in the process of providing her with the healing that she needs, and that's normal. That's more consistent with what the expectation should be for this kind of work. So, you know, when you get a client that, you know, calls you from Washington State or Montana, you know, and wants you to come out and visit, and sometimes they're even willing to pay, you know, I say, look, I'll come, but realistically, we're going to need to see each other a lot, and very few people would be in a financial situation where they could just keep flying my team out there, you know, every month. And I don't even have the, I mean, we wouldn't even have the time to do that, assuming. So really it's best in this ministry for people to come to the church office and be local to where your exorcist is so that you can visit on a regular basis, and what needs to be done can be done without it being too financially burdensome or cumbersome for either party involved.
Brian, I've heard people say, you know, I've done exorcisms, and I don't want to mention names, but I've done exorcisms, I've done one thing, and I cleared it out. But you, in what you're saying, it's a process. It doesn't happen. In reality, it doesn't happen in every case that it's a one-time shot. They don't ever have to call you again.
Correct. That's almost, again, it does happen with minor attachments. You can break minor attachments in one shot. You know, like I said, in one of those Ghost Adventures episodes, that is exactly what happened. And we've seen it in just the ministry locally here. But no, most of the time it's going to be a process, and that needs to be understood. And you know, it really is very discouraging to people when they hear that. They really were expecting that it's going to be some magic cure. It really isn't. It's absolutely a process, and the majority of the work is theirs. The exorcist is really just a facilitator to help guide them through, and to kind of clear out the immediate threat. So, you know, again, to liken it back to the medical field, you can kind of think of the exorcist almost as a first responder. You're having a heart attack, okay, and so you call 911. The paramedics get there first, and they perform CPR and revive you. So great. Okay, so now at least you're not dead. But that doesn't mean the thing that caused the heart attack has gone away. It just means now you need to be treated for this condition, and again, probably going to need a change of lifestyle, because maybe it was that you weren't eating properly, or maybe you weren't exercising, and you know, you developed a cardiovascular disease because of it. You know, it's the same thing with exorcism. Most people that end up with a demonic event are because they've become they've just let their spiritual lives go. Not unlike a person who just kind of is a couch potato and sits there eating potato chips watching TV every night. You know, that's not going to be healthy for your body. Well, not praying and not cultivating a relationship with God or building a relationship of grace within the church is not going to be very good for your soul. And so, yeah, diseases are going to happen. So in physiology, you know, you eat poorly, you don't exercise, you have heart attacks and strokes. And in the spiritual life, if you don't pray, you don't cultivate a relationship with God, you don't build your grace within the community of the church, well, you're going to be a good candidate for demonic attack. And, you know, it's about change of lifestyle. I can tell you right now, the exorcist would be completely superfluous if people simply dedicated their lives to God. That's all they have to do. It's not very hard. But because, you know, there's a lot of distraction and there's a lot of choices and, you know, there's a lot of questions that people have, and we've divorced ourselves from our spiritual nature. We've become overrun with technology, political distraction, you know, the stress of survival with, you know, paying the bills and, you know, pleasing your boss and God knows what else this poor civilization has to deal with. You know, God is kind of like the last thing on people's minds because, well, you know what? There's all these other things that are immediately in front of me that I need to deal with. And it's not always their fault, but you can't let that happen. It's just like, again, exercising. You know, if you don't pay attention and set time for exercising, I guarantee you life's going to get too complicated. You're not going to do it. You're not going to feel like doing it, even if you have the time. You're going to be too tired. And that's what ends up happening with people's prayer lives. It kind of falls to the wayside because there's just too many other things that they need to take care of. Well, it just puts you at spiritual risk.
How do you feel about all – it seems like everybody's on antidepressants and stuff like that. Like I personally know a bunch of people. And, I mean, do you think that this over-medication thing does a disservice to people, you know, just changing their brain chemistry and making them more susceptible to negative paranormal activity. Is that a thing or?
Yeah, I think it is, actually. I really do. I mean, it definitely changes brain chemistry. There's no question about that. That's what it's designed to do. All psychotropic medication is there to alter brain chemistry to prevent an individual from feeling the things that they feel. And that's the most important thing to remember about this. You know, you take, let's say, penicillin for an infection, a bacterial infection. Well, you know, that medication is designed to actually cure the infection. It actually fights the offending microbiology, and then, you know, you heal. But that's not how psychotropic medication works. You know, your person suffers from depression or anxiety and takes an antidepressant or a tranquilizer. That's not curing their depression or anxiety. It's masking it. So it's basically like putting a Band-Aid on an infectious wound instead of giving them the real thing that they need. Most depression and anxiety could be resolved with, again, the cultivation of a relationship with God, whatever that means. And I mean, of course, I'm going to be talking from a Christian vantage point. I'm a Catholic exorcist, so that's, you know, that's going to be the worldview from which I communicate. But when I'm talking about God, I mean, we can use the word divinity, we can use the word whatever word we want, and honestly, it doesn't. I wouldn't even go as far as to say it has to be Catholic religion or even Christian religion. What we need, though, is a spiritual center. We need that connection. Any anthropologist is going to tell you that it's wired into us to be spiritual people. And unfortunately, our modern society is trying to wire it out of us. And you can't do it. As soon as you take that element out of our nature, we will cease being human. And we will turn into virtually computerized automatons. Spirituality is what makes us human. That connection to the divine is what makes us human, and it's what got us where we are. So, you know, regardless of what God is to you or what religion is to you or whatever spiritual situation you feel compatible with, it's important that you cultivate that, because that's what's going to ultimately protect you from these types of what I call spiritual illnesses. I mean, you can call it demonic attack. We use words like victim. So it's a bit more provocative perhaps than it needs to be. Really, all a demonic attack is, or a demonic attachment, all it is just spiritual illness. And you heal it almost identically to a conventional medical illness. It's almost exactly the same process.
So we talked about this in past, but how do you feel for new listeners? I know we're going to have some new listeners listening to you tonight. What do you think about people that are on drugs, like Jason was saying, that take drugs or alcoholism, or start getting into divinity where they're playing with the Ouija board and things like that for getting answers and things like that? Can that open up a portal?
Let's start with the drugs first. I mean, mind-altering drugs, any kind of hallucinogens or things of that nature, yes, are going to do. That's what they're actually designed to do. The experience that people are having is altering the brain chemistry so that the brain becomes capable of sensing spiritual data that normally is filtered out of our range of consciousness. So that's essentially what a drug like LSD does, is it changes the brain chemistry just enough so that the person who's taking the substance can perceive aspects of the spiritual world that otherwise would not be available to them to see. Now, any shaman already knows this, okay? So when they're producing various types of remedies or various other things that they would use in vision quests, they're doing this very carefully with much skill, and, of course, with exceptional spiritual care. And that's a different type of thing, but that's done with a certain intention, and it's done, again, very skillfully. But when a person just decides, you know, they're going to take, you name it, heroin, even marijuana, you know, what it is doing is it is changing the brain chemistry, and it is opening one up to the elements of the spiritual world that we are not necessarily designed to perceive, or most of us are not really skillful enough to perceive it. I guarantee you, okay, you could go to a Buddhist monk who perhaps has been meditating for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years and give him marijuana or even LSD, and he would know exactly how to handle it. It wouldn't affect him like it would the average layperson, because his skill and faculties of awareness are so acute that the things that the drug would do would actually be trivial compared to the experiences that he's already been able to attain naturally. But for the average person, these are not healthy things, and it does open one up. So I always advise against any kind of mind-altering substances. Alcohol, you know, I think alcohol, even small amounts of marijuana are probably not very significant in terms of risk. But alcoholism, or even, you know, people that cannot get through their day without smoking a few joints, they're going to be more at risk. So yes, even alcohol can be too much. It's when you get to that point, you know, getting a little buzz, not really very risky. Getting intoxicated is always risky. So there's that element with substances. As far as things like occultism, Ouija boards and things of that nature, tarot decks, some people even would lump going to an astrologer in this. There's varying degrees of risk depending upon the situation at hand. I would never advise anybody to go and buy a tarot deck because, again, getting back to the same thing I said about, you know, the LSD and a layperson, you know, most people don't have the skill that a Buddhist monk who's been meditating for 40 years has. So, you know, these tools of the occult require, and Ouija board included, require an exceptional amount of skill as well as a strong faculty of awareness, which can only be developed through spiritual praxis, and that would include, of course, prayer, a connection to divinity, a understanding of our very nature at a fundamental level. All of these things would be necessary in order to be able to use these occult tools on a what would you call it, a well, in a layman's way, you know. So we go to fortune tellers, let's say, and you don't know. I can tell you right now, fortune tellers are extremely dangerous, and here's why. When a person does a reading for another individual, and it doesn't matter what kind of divination is being used, there is an exchange of energy. Now, most of the time, a person's not going to a fortune teller because everything's going right in their world and they want to make sure everything continues to go right. Most of the time, people are going to a fortune teller because there's something wrong and they want to know if it's going to get better. And so the fortune teller now has to exchange energy with all of these people that have possibly serious energy, and they take some of that energy with them, and it builds up and it builds up and it builds up. Eventually it forms into an attachment. And so now when you go, let's say you just decide you want to go for recreational purposes, and there are certainly people that do it for that. You know, you go, you want to see, well, what can they tell me? Now you're exchanging energy with this person who has numerous attachments from all of these other people that they've seen. You know, it's kind of like what they used to say in the 80s when they try to get you from, you know, prevent AIDS. They would say that, you know, if you had sex with someone, you know, it's like you're having sex with all the people they've had sex with. And they were saying that this is the danger of AIDS. Well, you know, tarot's a lot like that. Fortune telling is a lot like that. It's an exchange of energy, and now you get all the energy of everyone they've shared energy with. And that's not safe. So how do you make it safe? And again, it goes back to building a good, and I hate to keep using these medical analogies, but they really apply better than any other one I can think of. You have to build a good spiritual immunity. And the way that you do that is you take your vitamins and you exercise. And so in a spiritual context, your vitamins are the sacraments of the church. It's prayer. Your exercise is your relationship with God, building it on every opportunity that you have, whatever God means to you. Again, I'm always going to talk from a Christian vantage point, but I don't intend this to mean that, you know, it's Christian or nothing. It, whatever that is. Remember, I was a Buddhist before, you know, I became a bishop. So, you know, I have a great respect for many religions, and I find value in all of them. And certainly it's, what's important is that you have that connection to God, and God exists in some capacity in all of them. So, you know, it's accessible to everyone. No one has an excuse.
Now, we do have a caller. Are you open to questions? I don't know if they're just listening or maybe have a question for you. Are you open to that?
Yeah, sure. Sure, why not?
Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Mike. How are you, everyone?
Hey, Mike.
Thank you for taking my call. And,
yeah, Mike, where are you calling from?
Singapore.
Singapore. Okay.
Oh, right on.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Right on. That's good.
Thank you. Welcome. I mean, we have seen many UFOs activities in Singapore, and when I was in Japan, I saw also a lot of activity of UFOs, and right after them, we usually experience earthquakes. Is that correlation between sightings and earthquakes, please, or not?
You know, I would say that there is a correlation. I've heard of this before. You know, some of the work that I do in exorcism ministry involves occasionally people coming to me where they think they have some kind of demonic problem, because particularly in the United States, I'm not sure it's as pervasive in other countries, but here in the United States, a lot of Christian churches are teaching that aliens and the UFO phenomenon are demons in disguise. It's some kind of demonic deception. I don't subscribe to that particular opinion. I think they're absolutely very different things. But there are people that will come to me because they've had what would be a classic alien experience, or something that would be more along the line of an alien abduction, or maybe even like a close encounter of the third or fourth kind, and they think they have a demonic problem, and so they, of course, come to me. But it's interesting because they're nothing like, you know, the people that have had these types of encounters do not describe anything that is similar to what we would see in a person that has a genuine demonic event. And there have been reports in some of these cases that I have encountered where they have seen UFOs, and then there's been some type of physical disturbance to the earth as the result of it. So what the correlation is exactly, I don't really know. I don't really know what could be the relationship there, but there definitely seems to be a relationship between them. And I cannot emphasize enough, not that this caller, you know, suggested this, but I want to make sure that your audience understands, the alien phenomenon and UFOs are absolutely 100% separate from demonic activity. There is no relationship there. Not to say that there isn't a spiritual relationship. There definitely is, and I really do think that what we would call aliens, or you know, whatever is related to the UFO phenomenon as an entire area of research and study within the paranormal, I would say definitely has a very large spiritual component, and it can be malevolent, but it's not demonic.
Yeah, I have seen a triangle one. I have seen it, and I have seen this light. I mean, a square. I mean, it's like a big light on the sky that is maneuvering left to right at a speed of blinking an eye. And I've seen those kinds. So, and recently in Florida, a couple saw not rectangular. It was more a square kind UFO. So, do you think UFOs are real, or is it man-made from different governments around the globe, please?
I think there's a little bit of both. I think some of it is man-made, but I would venture to say that I personally, I mean, again, this is just my own opinion. I would say that a lot of it could be reverse engineering from technology that is not of this world that has been acquired by various governments around the world. So I think that's a very plausible explanation for some of this activity, but I would say I'm not even completely convinced that UFOs are alien in the sense of being from another planet. I would say that there may be very an interdimensional kind of relationship there. So these may very well be beings from some type of interdimensional terrestrial event, something that is actually intrinsic to this planet. It's part of the Earth. It's just not a part of the Earth that we're familiar with.
So like a parallel universe and multi-universe and et cetera. Are you talking about that, sir?
Well, I don't know if I would go as far as to say a parallel universe, but I would say that it could very well be a level of reality that is beyond our understanding of the three dimensions that we're familiar with, which are, you know, of course, length, width, and height. We're used to those three dimensions, but we, you know, there are absolutely multiple layers of the universe, things that we're just now starting to scratch the surface with in various forms of theoretical physics and quantum mechanics, and even looking at the world from a miniature point of view, looking at what happens at the subatomic level, going all the way to a macrocosmic understanding. Just this planet alone would have multiple layers of reality, and who knows if there aren't beings that are non-dimensional existing within those layers between the various aspects of the physical world. So all we know is what we're able to sense with our five senses, but we also know that there's a lot more than what we're able to sense. And, you know, prior to not that long ago, we didn't even know about X-rays, and we didn't know about anything that really existed beyond the color spectrum of red through violet. Now we understand infrared, and we can use infrared and ultraviolet as well, and all of the range of light that exists beyond that. But until we discovered that there was more to the spectrum, we didn't even know it was there because our five senses can't sense it. So, you know, I think that more than it being a being from another planet, I think it's actually something that's interdimensional and terrestrial to this planet.
Okay, so if according to you, if it's interdimensional and they can come easily pass, go back, go forward, like a remote viewing, so, I mean, they have a higher, technologies that they can make them from whatever dimensions they are, fifth dimension or tenth dimension, coming back to us, and then disappear back, and basically, I believe that they brought all this technology to us because the first spine surgery done in close to 1890s, and now we see what happens. They can go to your, anywhere in your bones or etc. I mean, put a hardware on it, and without any side effects, you will heal up, and you are just, you know, you can become like a bionic man. But so this technology comes from them, don't you think so?
Yeah, I would agree. I look at here in the United States, there's a very large interest in the Roswell incident that occurred in around the 1940s, I believe. And, you know, I find it always very interesting that this incident occurred, and then in a very short span of time after, all of a sudden we had this explosion of technology where we started to see computers. And I don't think – how do we go from, you know, we've been on – as in this current form as a human being, we've been on this planet for about 1.5 million years. And you mean to tell me that we went from a pre-industrial civilization – all the way up to the late 1800s or early 1900s, and now after the 1940s, we have this crash and then an explosion of technology to the point that now that, you know, here we are podcasting across the world and doing this from our own homes. That's remarkable. I think there is definitely an influence there. Yeah.
Well, caller, I agree with you 100%. I appreciate you. Go ahead, sir. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, I was. We do have another caller, but I want to thank you calling in all the way from Singapore this evening. And
thank you very much for the time. Thank you from your host too. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
For calling
I wanted to add that, you know, UFOs are kind of my specialty, and I would say, and this is only based on my opinion, that probably a large amount of sightings are actually secret aircraft. Back in the day when the United States was developing the U-2 spy plane and the SR-71 Blackbird, people were misidentifying it because they're not familiar with seeing those type of aircrafts in the sky, and you can only imagine nowadays the technology
what
that's out there, and that's being, I'm sure that...
Yeah.
I totally believe in aliens, and I totally believe in UFOs, but I also believe that, you know, there's probably a lot of aircraft that are being developed and tested that we're not familiar, which would probably blow our minds. But we do have another caller. Are you open to taking another question?
Yeah. Yeah, let's keep going. It's fun.
Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this?
Hey, Sherry, it's Michael.
Hi, how are you, Michael?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Very, very good. For those who don't know who Michael is part of the Paranormal North Coast of British Columbia team, which I'm part of too. So thank you for calling in.
Hey, I just wanted to, I had a couple of questions. I know like on Ghost Adventures, because I don't watch as much as I used to because I don't have cable anymore, so it's kind of hard to get sometimes. But I know a lot of their... I won't say a lot, but there seem to be a lot of those shows, for me at least, that have a demonic element included. And it seems like it's more now than before. Like you said, it seems to have increased some. And I just wondered, because I'm in the paranormal field, and we do run across these things, you know, from time to time on occasions. I call them tripping, you know, you've been more than you thought, you know. It'll have a negative attachment kind of thing will happen, but and then we'll have to get something done about it. But with the cases that seem to be happening now, I just wonder if maybe sometimes you look. I don't have to put this and not sound insulting because I'm not, but when you're doing you know, and you have a TV show and you're doing things for entertainment purposes and you wind up, it seems like you find them more than average. Would that be fair?
Well, I know that as far as Ghost Adventures, I mean, can't speak for the other shows, but for Ghost Adventures, I know that the foundation to that show has always been about the gathering of evidence to validate the understanding of there being life after death and perhaps ghosts being one of the doorways through which we can explore that. I think for several seasons of Ghost Adventures, they did that remarkably well and for most part, perhaps even satisfied their own curiosities about much of the things that they would encounter. The natural evolution, I think, of this is to also explore this other darker side to paranormal investigation, because certainly in their own efforts to do this work and to bring their results to us in our homes through the television show, they inevitably encountered it. Just as any one of us who are working in the paranormal field inevitably encounter it, whether we're looking for it or not. And you know, Zach Bagans, being who Zach Bagans is going to always push the envelope and want to know more. That's just his nature. And I don't think, you know, I think he's always willing to take whatever risks are necessary in order to acquire that knowledge. Whether or not it increases their chances of getting it, well, yes, in a way it can, because the more you go looking for it, the more it will end up finding you. And then, you know, there's always the possibility that you reach a point where you're done and it won't let you ever be done, you know, because once you've been made known to it, well, now you will attract it. And there is a relationship, again, getting back to a little bit of what I was saying earlier about the exchange of energy, there is absolutely an exchange of energy in paranormal research as well. When you encounter an entity, whatever it is, whether it be an ordinary spirit or something that might be more malevolent, like a demon, for example, or even a very negative elemental, there's an exchange of energy there as well. And the more your energy is changed by the things that you encounter, the more you're going to start to attract things that are at that same level. So that's the risk. And so, yeah, to a certain extent, what you're saying, if I'm understanding your question, the more they explore the demonic, the more the demonic will ultimately find them.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. And I, from our own case, we don't go looking for that. And I've been doing it for like 20 years with different groups. And then on occasion, you know, we would find something that would be of a negative nature, you know, and we would have to get it, you know, have to have someone come and help deal with that, you know, someone. But this seemed to me like as much as they seem to find that, it's got to take a toll on them. I know just from what I can see, I mean, their health would have to be affected in different things. You know, in my mind, there would have to be a point where you would have to back off.
Yeah.
You know, because I know, I mean, I've, like I said, I haven't seen every episode. I used to watch more than I do now because I don't have cable anymore. But I know that they've used the Ouija board at least on one occasion that I saw in an investigation. And also, they had a chance to, because I know Zach has a museum now, I think, in Las Vegas, I believe it is.
Right, yeah.
And I know that they had a chance to be in close proximity to other certain haunted objects. I don't want to get into too much specifics, but an object that was known to be or reported to be quite attached, and it just seems like it's an awfully big risk. I just thought I'd throw that out there. I mean, I wasn't trying to criticize or anything. I just, it seemed like, you know, the more you go looking for it, you're going to find it, and then when you got to find it, you got to find somebody to help you get rid of it. And
well,
you know,
yeah,
and it's going to take a toll on you over time.
It will, and it does, and, you know, that is part of this risk. There's no question about that. Fortunately, they do have me, and, you know, I have made it very well known to all of them that at any point, if they find that they have acquired an attachment that they are not able to get rid of through the methods that they personally use to protect themselves, that I am at their disposal. So that they can continue to do this work as safely as they possibly can, and because I do think on the other side of the equation, they are doing a wonderful service in the sense that nobody else out there is taking it to the length that they are, and maybe, you know, some people might argue that it's not necessary, but honestly, I think any exposure of the demonic is a wonderful thing because it likes to lurk in the shadows. And I think it's spent too many thousands of years in the shadows. And now because of television and because of shows like Ghost Adventures, it's being exposed. And people like myself are getting on radio shows like this one and talking about it. And that weakens it. On the other side, while it might be, you know, causing one issue or putting a particular group at risk, there is also an advantage in the fact that now people are better informed about it and it's becoming less taboo of a subject, and people who might not have believed in it before now might start to think that, well, maybe there is something to this, and that actually is better than not believing it, because if you completely ignore it, if you just pretend it doesn't exist, then that's exactly what it wants. So there's a good and bad to it.
Well, I hate to say it, guys, but we are out of time. Time flies.
Okay, well,
thank you for your time.
Thank you for calling.
It's going by really, really fast. Hey,
I know.
Brian,
it did.
When people, you know, they when they equate as an exorcist and they see what Linda Blair with the exorcist and everything, is that true? People, you know, you can see that in real life where, you know, the heads are turning and things. have they been pretty traumatic in the cases that you worked at?
No, I've never seen spinning heads, but I have seen words scratched on or words appear on people's skin. Vomiting is a very almost absolute certainty. That will almost always happen in most exorcisms. So the pea soup thing, it's not really projectile and like that. But there's definitely a lot of dry heaving and gagging and spitting up. That is very typical and expected. Levitation, it has happened. I do know exorcists that have witnessed it. I have never really seen, I've only seen it once, and it was very mild. It was not as dramatic as what you see in the movie. So really what you see in the movies like Exorcist and some of the other ones that are out there, it's just an exaggeration of the truth. It's usually a lot more subtle than that, but you know, even our last exorcism, it was very interesting. We were performing, a minor rite, and the client started lashing out very violently, and Sister Mary Joan had to hold her down because she started to try to choke herself. And when I started some of the rites of exorcism, the lights in the church started to go out, and the lights blinked out three times. And of course, you know, three is usually a sign of, in many cases, of mocking the Trinity. And then it actually blew out the power to the entire block. So there's things like that happen, and that can be sometimes dramatic. But you know, as far as like the spinning heads and no, I haven't. I have never witnessed that.
That's scary. Can you imagine being there, Jason, and witnessing something like that?
No, I choose to stay as far away from that as absolutely possible. I don't, I'll keep watching horror movies, and that's enough of that for me. I got too much going on in my life.
Yeah, there you
but,
go.
But I want to thank you, Brian, for coming on.
Thank you for all the work you do for helping, adding value to other people's lives. And, you know, it's a big, huge responsibility, Brian, for what you do. It's a lot of heart work, a lot of hard work, and you're putting yourself out there and just helping those that are really in need, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. That means a lot to hear that, and hopefully we've done some good out there.
There's a lot of people that really need it.
Yeah, there are. There are, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Thank you for all your work, and thanks again for taking the time to come on the show tonight and educating our listeners, and just really appreciate it.
Anytime. Just let me know, and I'll make time for you.
Right on.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for staying up. I know we have a three-hour, I think at least a 2-3 hour difference, so yeah, we really appreciate you staying up and just being on there and just, like I said, educating our people and just supporting us. We appreciate you. Thank you, Brian.
No problem. My pleasure.
All right, Sherry, what do we got next week?
Hey, we're going to have a new guy. His name is Ron Patton. He has a new book out. As a matter of fact, he works closely with Clyde Lewis. So those who don't know who Clyde Lewis is, he's a radio show host, Ground Zero. And anyway, he is works closely with Clyde Lewis, and he has his own book on the paranormal. We're going to have him for the first time, Ron Patton from Hawaii. So, we're going to talk about the paranormal. We're going to talk about conspiracy theory. We're going to just kind of run the gamut. But just going to be interesting about talking about his book. I think it's called Paranoia. I think that's what it's called. So, I'm looking forward to having him on our show for the first time.
Cool. Sounds fun. Well, with that, we'll close it out. I'm going to go for a nighttime walk, and because of the subject matter this evening, I'm going to be a little nervous because it's dark out, but I'll get through it. We'll see everybody next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And if you haven't yet, give us a like on Facebook. And with that, hope everybody has a wonderful, fantastic, and safe week. Good night, everyone.
Hey, take care, everybody. Peace.